You're watching Fanboy Versus with your hosts, JD Church, Nicole Hale, Chris Triplett, and Chris McFeely.
And you are watching Fanboy Versus. I am your host, JD, this week, joined by Chris Triplett, Chris McFeely, and that's not Nicole Hale. Nicole Hale is out.
not unless I looked.
But I can see how you could be confused. No. Sorry, Nicole. Ken! Ken is here. Ken of Superhero Time fame. Or infamy. Notorious punching bag of Superhero Time is here. And thanks for being here, Ken.
Not a problem. Glad to be.
So, you're a comic book dork like the rest of us. We had 30 minutes of comic book discussion on Superhero Time that was cut out 2 weeks ago. So I was like,
you should have just kept that, and that could have been like the lost episode of Fanboy Versus or something.
Edited
it together.
I'm sure that's
like zero issue.
Episode zero,
we were talking about having.
XV keeps a lot of stuff, so I'm sure that he has the video for that, but or has the audio at least.
We
don't do video. We don't do video on that show. If you wonder why, watch the 100th episode. And you'll see why. So,
most of the people on the show don't want to. So.
Right.
I don't care. So.
Yeah. See, you're on this show, and
exactly.
I mean, your video is frozen on my side, but.
Oh, good.
Yeah. So.
That's a good sign.
But it's not a bad shot. So we'll just. If you want to reset,
we'll leave it at that.
Yeah, we'll leave it at that. So, okay. So, little bit of comics this week, and little bit of news this week. But stuff that came out was decent, so we'll talk about those. So, Chris McFeely, news?
Really, the only news is that the Iron Man 3 trailer happened. First, they gave us a teaser for the teaser, but then they teased us with the teaser.
Pre-teaser.
And then we got a trailer.
So,
And wow. Oh, yeah. Could this be, after The Dark Knight Rises, the first... I suppose it would be the second after The Dark Knight Rises. The first... superhero movie to have a third installment that's actually good? Who knows?
I hope so.
Yeah. It's interesting. A lot of people have talked about, the second Iron Man movie being kind of weak. I didn't think it was that bad. I mean, I guess I can see what people are meaning.
It wasn't bad. It's just that there was an Iron Man 1, so that's kind of the problem.
Right.
Yeah. It's the same film again.
Yeah,
it really
there's
is.
There's no upping the stakes, and holy crap, does this one look dumb?
Stark's mansion getting blown up.
They are leaving us no illusions of what they're going to be doing and putting him through in the course of this one.
Yeah. No.
And after Avengers, they really had to do something to just, kind of punch you in the gut, too.
Yeah, I like that. I mean, even in the beginning of the trailer, one of Tony's lines is that he hasn't been the same since New York.
I think he's been the same since New York. I love that.
And it's like...
It's like we've had this interconnecting universe for a couple of years now, but it was that line that really suddenly rammed home for me the full implications of it. Because really, we've had all this fun lead-in stuff that's been consigned to after-credit stuff. And we had the Avengers, and it was super fucking awesome. But I kind of felt like it was like, okay, done it. Everybody back to their own films now. But then what do we get? The first thing out of the Iron Man trailer is this. And it's like, shit, that happened. Oh, God, we're going to feel the ramifications. And suddenly, it's like, we are actually getting some kind of adventure serial where we get to have two bits every year and we don't have to wait years between films. Suddenly it's a universe with this one light that has transformed in my head into a real universe.
Go ahead.
It's probably the entire reason why they put that line in the trailer too.
And I like how, like you said, it's a universe now where you literally don't know. Like, dude, it could be like, I'm in trouble. He could, make a call, and then, the Hulk, lands on the danger.
Oh, my God.
Anything could happen in this movie. Captain America's shield could, take off, some dude's head or something, and we wouldn't even know what the hell's on.
Yeah. Like I said, it ups it for cameos or whatever. I'm interested. One of my concerns is that they said part of the storyline was going to be based on the extremists, and of course that makes me a little wary because the Extremis armor, even though it's pretty much standard and incorporated into the comic, and it makes it really super easy for the comic. You know, I'd been concerned about how that's going to translate to the film, and it looks like from the trailer, they may call it Extremis, but this seems to be much more of a, I guess you, like the recall armor, you know, where it's like, you know, he can like think it, and then the armor comes to him.
Yeah, I think that's probably as far as they'll go with it. Like, I don't think we'll see an undersheath stored in the hollows of his bones coming out over him like in the original Extremis story. Looks like it'll just be mine. Because you just, I mean, all you see is the armor.
Yeah, come on to his arm.
But I got a hint, you know, the story where the armor came alive, like the scene where it's got pepper, and I was like, kind of, what in the...
Are they
about the moment where the whole trailer turned around and suddenly...
Yeah, that's the other part, because it's like, are they doing the sentient armor too?
There's so many possibilities it could be. It's like, is it just this Malik character from Extremis having used Extremis to take control of the armor? Has the armor come to life? My bet presently, and it is just a guess, but my bet would be that because it's linked up with his mind now, when he sleeps or something, it's like, or maybe his, but his subconscious is going to control the armor somehow.
That could be interesting too.
It is. And it's like it's going for Pepper to protect her, to take her away somewhere, keep her safe, maybe. That's my guess. That's my guess. So we got that. You know, AIM is going to be in here somewhere. We know this Malik character, the Extremist character, that's happening in the Mandarin!
Oh, my God. He's
got 10 rings.
He's got 10 rings, yes! Are they powered? I don't know that I care, but he's got 10 of them!
I literally do not care if those have powers or not.
No.
I really, really don't, and I know it seems like something I probably should care about. Those could just be jewelry for all I care.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, really. I mean, at this point, it's like, I'm okay with that, the way the universe is set up.
Yeah.
Yeah, but we got to talk about the voice. Like, we've got to talk about the voiceover.
I listened to the trailer, and I legitimately wasn't sure if it was Ben Kingsley doing the narration. Like, I wasn't sure if that was supposed to be the Mandarin or if it was supposed to be the other character, the villain. It was supposed to be like the actual Extremist villain. But it's such a strange not Asian voice. it's not like I'm expecting the Mandarin to be
Sure what he's supposed to be trying to be exactly.
Yeah. They do seem to have gone in that same sort of vein, like, you know, we talked about Bane having a sort of non you know
lovely voice.
Yeah, but this is, like, very sort of similar. Not that it's the same, but it's in that similar idea.
Lesson one.
Lesson number one.
It's not like I'm expecting him to be all, sorry, I own the map.
Yeah, really, exactly.
I'm not expecting that or anything, you know. But I don't know what I was expecting. Because it's not like, to be fair, it's not like cartoon depictions of the Mandarin have gone for any kind of stereotypical Asian yellow peril voice or anything, you know. Who was it? Ed Gilbert did the Mandarin in the 90s cartoon. He just did his Ed Gilbert voice that he does, Blitzwing, and I think Chinese or, you know, Asian actors did the voice in second season of that show and in Armored Adventures as well, but there's never been anything about it. I don't know what I was expecting, but it wasn't that.
I was just expecting a Ben Kingsley, you know,
but a Ben Kingsley just Ritter. Doing it.
But instead, we get "Some call me a terrorist."
Some call me a terrorist.
I call myself a teacher. It's like if Beavis spent like 15 years in a monastery in Tibet, you know,
like Beavis Obama.
Oh, someone tweet that, please.
I think I'm myself to tweet.
I guess that's Butthead. It's more Butthead. It's like, huh.
I never remember which one is which. So.
Beavis is the squeaky voice. Butthead is the little bit deeper.
That.
That's okay. Still, there we go. It's like Butthead went to a monk, monastery up in Tibet for a couple of years.
Not inner peace.
Yeah.
God. Dude, that's like if Beavis was in the Shadow movie or something. You're just like describing a plot for a movie that shouldn't exist.
Yeah.
Well. So, like, what do you think about the armor now? Seeing it, like, not just in a steel, but like in a video, it still looks kind of weird. I was thinking Iron Man's armor looks like candy corn. Why?
The inverted colors are a little odd, but it definitely looks better in motion than it does on the thing.
A lot of things.
And frankly, I mean, if that thing's coming to life anyway, odds are he's not going to be in it very much, and we'll get another. We'll get the Mark 9 or whatever mark he's. Well, I mean, technically, if that's the Mark 8, then. And his next one would be the Mark 9. But...
I sincerely doubt there's only going to be one extra armor in the movie anyway.
Yeah.
So...
Well, speaking of other armor, then, I guess that leads us to the final thing, which is the Iron Patriot.
Oh, yeah.
Which I don't know how long ago we had known, but it had been pretty much confirmed that that is going to be Rhodey.
Yeah, just War Machine and a new paint job.
If you see some of the high-res images, it actually has his name
on
it. Yeah, it actually
has his name on the armor, so that's where it was.
It's like a very American, on
a fighter jet or something like that.
I think it's going to come out to be like that's more of a nod, or I mean, we could see really wacky stuff, and maybe the other villain guy is going to take that armor. You know, who knows?
Maybe. I don't know. I mean, it just seems like
I would think that Rhodey's going to get tired of being. Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say it's a really sensible incorporation of the idea.
Yeah.
He's essentially stolen Stark's armor, and now that the immediate problem in that storyline has been dealt with, Hammer and Whiplash, they can go off and paint it red, blue, white, red, white, and blue, and start doing things for the good of his nation, and be a big public figurehead and everything.
You're like, Captain America ran off somewhere. So.
Yeah. Well, and I think that's another tie-in, too. I think that's a tie-in to... It's,
the government
doesn't
have control of Captain America anymore, so let's get that one guy they do have who has superpowers.
Well, and yeah, I don't think that's any mistake that those motifs are similar, you know, I mean, I think that's, you know, I mean, there's a comic book reason for it, but I think there's a good in-film reason and in-film universe to do that as well. So, I'm not bothered by it. I mean, they're never going to do the Siege style, you know...
No.
Story
Norman
Osborn as Iron Patriot. I mean, no, there's no way. It's just not going to happen. So, you know, he's way too busy in Spider-Man. So,
but tell that to the internet.
He's way too busy not being Amazing Spider-Man.
Exactly.
He's way too busy not
being Amazing Spider-Man and dying.
Yeah. So, anyway, it was. I think overall, I mean, I was super happy with it. I was. I mean, especially with the sort of the denouement where you've got Stark, you know, walking through the snow, dragging a sled of the armor, you know, it's kind of like really mysterious sort of.
Little bit Dark Knight-y, but not in a bad way.
Yeah.
No.
I mean, frankly, if that means that they're actually going to deconstruct the character a little bit and just raise the stakes from where Iron Man 2 left him, then... Even more power, really. It's what the second film should have been doing, but
they got to do something. I mean, they can't just do Iron Man again.
Our villain has caused some trouble, and now he must invent his way out of it.
Well, and I think it makes sense because you know that was the whole thing that that didn't make sense in the second film is like if you reveal your identity, you're going to have to pay a price for that. You know. And that's what didn't happen in the second film. It's like you really expect Tony to pay a high price for that, and he really didn't have to.
No, it's like he's going to in this one, though, with that.
Exactly.
All these enemies, and I got to protect the people I love and all that stuff. He's kind of – it's like, damn, I wish I hadn't have said that. You know?
Yeah.
Damn, I wish I wasn't Tony Stark.
So, cool. Well, I'm excited. This looks good, so – May.
What's up with April? I mean, it said April in the trailer.
The trailer I saw said May because I was looking for that.
The trailer I saw was from Marvel UK, so I think it's coming out earlier over there.
Yeah, that's the one I saw.
That's what I'm talking about.
April. Damn it.
Yeah, that's kind of what I figured it was, but
happened for the UK.
Damn it.
Yeah, I saw that. I thought like April. What in the hell? We don't get movies like that in April.
So.
Like, it's going to be like 20th to 30th of April or something, as close to May as it possibly could be.
It'll be close, I'm sure. So, any other news?
Until November, and I think that's really weird.
What is?
Thor
Thor's two, November.
Yeah, just, I mean, obviously they're spacing them out throughout the year. You know, one's mm-hmm. like late spring, early summer, and then Thor's, and then early winter. I get why they're doing it, but it doesn't seem like a good time of the year to go launching major films like that.
I would a good Harry Potter month. So, you know, Thor's
yeah,
got like
yeah.
three. Well, there you
this
go.
This year we got Skyfall coming instead.
I would pay money if Thor in the trailer would say winter is coming. A winter is coming. Yes. Really? Like, really? He did that? He did that? That's awesome. It's hilarious. Any other news? Anything?
I got nothing.
Nothing?
Wow.
No new announcements or anything. I mean, there's this chat about how Dan Slott may or may not have accidentally tweeted a spoiler for Superior Spider-Man when he meant to DM it to the artist, but he might also just be fucking with everybody.
He could be. I didn't even see what the...
No, I didn't see it, and I didn't want to see it, but I accidentally stumbled onto what it was.
I mean, I did, but see, that's the thing, is like, I was actually trying to find it, because Bleeding Cool posted the, they posted the text with omission, and said, well, if you want to know, it's out there, and I'm like, but I don't know where, and everything else was just reposted.
I'll tell you
after
the show if you want to know. I didn't want to know, but somebody just posted it on Spoiler, and it all sparked thread, and I was like,
So in this scene, Kane's gonna punch Dr. Octopus. Oh shit! I shouldn't have sent that out.
Yeah,
essentially, yeah. Like, but it wasn't Kane. But,
yeah, but I don't know. Dan,
people are thinking, and it's been deleted and everything. Like, he deleted it, but I'm still sticking with the idea he might be fucking with us. You know, Trevor, do you know
what
it is?
Sounds like something they.
I've not seen it. I've.
Oh, you don't know? Okay, right. Okay, okay. Right. I guess I'm the only one to know.
Yeah, we'll definitely wait.
I'm not gonna tell you if you don't want to know, because if it's
pretty big, you think? Pretty big.
Well, you're gonna jizz your pants. So that's, yeah.
Wow.
Jizz damn. In my pants.
Wow. Okay. I don't know. I'm like, it's just too weird to not say out loud, and then we'll move on. But the American Luge team apparently is being sponsored by Valiant Comics, and they're
that
gonna get
vibrant and popular brand.
And they're gonna have their uniforms done up like Exo Man of War.
Remember him, kids?
If you don't remember him, the only way that I remember him is because he was in a team-up game with Iron Man, and he was the other character I could choose.
Just the other character you could choose!
You know, the only thing I actually remember Valiant Comics from is, like, there was an arcade that used to have that as, like, used to have, like, Valiant Comics as prizes for the tickets. So basically it was the cheapest thing possible.
10 cents.
You know, honestly, the only thing I remember Valiant for is their freaking crossovers. Like you just said, like the Image thing crossover, the Predator and Robot Fighter. What was it called? Magnus?
Robot Fighter.
Robot Fighter and Predator or something. I was like, that's it. I remember the crossover.
Wow.
Yes.
Yep.
He was punching some Predators.
Death Pit, Blood Match, Blood
Decimate,
Pact.
Yeah.
Death Pact. Yeah. Death Blood.
God, the 90s were awesome.
Oh, God. So, and then the other thing that happened to me this week is I came into my shop as the new kid was bound to a chair with duct tape.
What?
And he was supposed to be acting as Mr. Miracle and escaping. So, you know, a long discussion goes on after that. And as I'm getting ready to leave, we're talking and my shop owner is like, oh, I'm out of our featured comic of the day. What do I have a bunch of? Talon. And and he's like, that's our featured. I haven't read it, but I want to sell it. So so he threw that in there. And I made mention that I sort of think of Talon as like the 2010s, as the decade version of Azrael, where it's like going to be trying to... you know, come up with this, and we're like, oh, yeah, that's kind of true. And the kid, who's like 17 or something, he's like, what's wrong with Azrael? We just all kind of turn and look at him, and I'm like, oh, child.
As someone who got into comics around that time,
It's like, oh, Padawan, you have so much to learn about comics.
But dude, he tore Bane apart in like three pages or something. What was it?
He followed the trope perfectly. You become the new hero, and then you do a more awesome stuff. Yeah, he did
and
that.
His fingers were nice.
Shoulder pads. And...
Yeah, his fingers were nice.
Pad. I mean, Jesus, he was like Wolverine, but better.
And he had those like cable style armor thing. Oh, yeah, he was totally 90s.
And he had the belts on there, too.
Yeah.
Batarangs, he just shot him out of his arm.
His gauntlet would just shoot batarangs in like his first issue of. Shadow of the Bat, he fought this real screwed up looking skeleton character guy. Yeah, that couldn't feel pain or something. Yeah.
Yeah.
I love Azrael Batman.
Oh, 90s.
So.
Don't look at me.
Yeah.
I wasn't reading DC back then.
Yeah, I was only reading Batman, so, you know.
I think I was reading everything I could get my hands on.
That was my. Porn. Issue of Batman for many, many years.
Playboy.
Of course, just for the article.
Just for the article. Oh, hey, it's Michael Keaton. sure. The Michael Keaton article. Yay.
Interview with Lorne Michaels. Wait, that's no good.
All right, so let's get into then, I guess, recommending comics. As we said, we're basically recommending everything that we read this week because
just before we get started there, guys, I posted on Twitter that we were ripping on Azrael, and Gruffy and Stu are just going, "Don't do that! Why are you gonna do that?"
Why does that not surprise me?
Funny that.
I don't know why. Huh. So, love you guys, but you know, I mean, just call it like you see it.
Come on, guys, you Quesada made him.
Joe Quesada's so great. Look at all the amazing things he's done at Marvel.
What is that?
I have no idea. I just made that up.
He fixed Spider-Man. He was so messed up, and now it made him better. Except for what Dan Slott did and screwed him up.
Why are you talking like that?
I have no idea.
Why are you talking like that?
Is that the Family Guy character?
It's a little bit. It's like a younger version of. It's a younger version of that character.
Younger version.
Right. Yeah, if you can imagine that. Anyway, moving along. Chris Triplett, save us, sir. Talk about something.
Please. So we're going to recommend everything we've read this week. I was thinking about saying that I read a Bazooka Joe comic. That's my...
There you go, kids. Read that one.
No, Punisher Warzone came out, so it's kind of like, I guess it's like Greg Rucka's swan song to Punisher. It's a 5-issue miniseries. We get to say goodbye to this excellent, excellent run on Punisher.
Oh my swan God. Song or I'm getting the fuck out of here. Screw you guys.
Like,
you're gonna put him on Thunderbolt. Screw you guys.
Messed up my character.
And it's basically that, like, at the beginning of the issue, Spider-Man is like reading like the newspaper or something, and he sees the story about the end of the Punisher regular series, where the Punisher was like in this building and a bunch of cops got killed and some bad guys got shot, and in the confusion, nobody really knows, did Punisher shoot some cops or not? But this is kind of like the thing that sets Spidey off, and he's like, you know, this lunatic, this murderer's been run around for too long, it's time to take him down. And Spidey pretty much does it. I mean, like, he basically catches Punisher and beats the hell out of him at the beginning of the issue.
Damn.
And, yeah, I mean, it's pretty bad. He's like, you know, you're just some dude, you know, how how can you even possibly think about beating me? And he's like, you know, I got the spider sense, the agility, the strength. Punisher's even at one point, he loses his guns, and he's like punching Spidey. He's going pop, pop. And Spidey's not even like, you know, responding to it. So he like, yeah. He had him. And then at the end of it, then Punisher like pulls a grenade and throws it at him.
Jesus Christ.
Oh my God.
Yeah, and he's like, it blows up and Spidey's back's like on fire or something. And Punisher's like, I don't want to hurt you, but you're not giving me a choice. And he starts like kicking Spidey in the face. And Punisher gets away. But then at this point, this is like where Spidey's like, yeah, we're done. He goes to the Avengers. He assembles the Avengers.
He's like, oh, I'm going to go get my dad to beat you up.
Wow.
He assembles the Avengers to hunt down the Punisher. It's kind of hilarious because, like, they all show up and they're like, so, like, is Kane attacking? You know, what's going on? You know, and Spidey's like, you know, there's this guy we need to stop. The Punisher's gone too far. And then, like, everybody starts to, like, you know, turn around and walk away. And like, Stark's like, you know, I'm heading back to Paris. And, you know, Black Widow's like, can you give me a lift? And all this stuff. And Spidey's like, he basically pleads his case. This dude is a mass murderer. And Cap backs him up and says, yeah, you know, you're probably right. He's, you know, we can't, like... he basically says, you're right, you know, how can we, like, you know, protect just the innocent people that get hurt? You know, why is it that we let a person murder people, even if they are evil? I mean, it's still a murder, you know. We basically need to stop this guy. And that's kind of like the setup of this series. It's like the Avengers are coming for the Punisher. And it's kind of cool because, like, Wolverine disagrees with it to the point that he actually goes and he warns the Punisher. He shows up at, like, one of his little weapons depots where he's got, like, guns and everything, and he tells him that, yeah, you know, you've pushed too hard this time, Frank, is basically what it says. The Avengers are coming for you. And he says, so they sent you, and he says, no, this is a warning. They'll lock you up someplace alone, someplace isolated. They won't know what else to do with you, and it'll kill you. And Punisher's just, you know, leaving, and he says, you know, they're going to know you told me. And he Punisher had his little depot rigged to explode if anybody like came in there. So Wolverine basically, you know, triggers the rig so that it'll explode, so it'll destroy all traces. I don't know if he actually got burnt with it too, because he had to like trip a wire in order to do it. But yeah, that's pretty much the setup of it. Is it's Punisher versus the Avengers, and it's going to be interesting. I guess this is also kind of cleaning house. You got to lead to that stuff where he's going to be on Thunderbolts or something, so I think we know how this is going to end.
Yeah, considering that. Yeah.
But still pretty cool. I'm looking forward to it. I mean, this has been a great run of Punisher, and it's sad to see it go, and I'm afraid this is going to be like, you know, when, like, you know, your horse is dying and somebody's got to shoot it in the head.
Wow.
Damn.
Wow.
You want to look away, but you kind of don't want to look away. You know what I mean?
I know the feel, bro, with all the stuff that's ending at the minute.
Yeah.
God, yeah. I mean, tons of stuff is ending, so. Huh. So, check out them shooting your horse in the head and read Punisher. Great. Great way to end that, Chris. Thanks.
By the way, it's got a great cover, too, which has, like, all the Avengers, like, iconic symbols, like Iron Man's faceplate with bullet holes in it, and Thor's hammer on the ground shattered, and Captain America's shield with blood on it. I'm, like, thinking, there's no damn way Punisher's going to do all that.
Yeah.
That's not going to happen.
All the stuff that's going to happen in the book, you know, yeah.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
Truth in advertising.
Yeah. Awesome. All right. Ken.
Yo.
That's your turn, sir. What would you like to recommend this week?
Is my video still bonked?
Yeah, it's still frozen. No problem.
Oh, okay, cool. Oh, regardless. Because it was basically the only new thing I got this week, Amazing Spider-Man 696.
Good choice. Good choice.
We got a local one here normally like this covers guy. This for us, but...
Yeah.
I like this guy. I think she keep him.
Well, wait, he also likes Scarlet Spider, so...
Yes, I do.
That's okay.
That's okay.
One.
Yeah, that's the other reason Ken's here.
Yes, I do quite enjoy Scarlet Spider.
See?
But see.
He's smart.
This is the second part of our Hobgoblin arc here, leading towards number 700. And, well, things did not quite end up too well for Peter last issue, as he got snagged by Phil and has now been taken to Kingpin and his assortment of ninjas.
I love the beginning of this issue.
So
because
weird.
I called it 100%. You know? He's like, I've got the best exploit in the world. Yeah. It's like, this is Peter Benjamin Parker, and he's the key to everything, because believe it or not, this little geek is Spider-Man's best friend.
Yes! Spider-Man!
Phil is not the sharpest knife in the drawer.
Yeah. Well, apparently neither is Kingpin, but, you know.
No, but...
remember, magic is involved.
Not anymore.
Not unless it gets revealed. It still has the effect of... Because, like, Kingpin doesn't remember, you know, Peter, you know, stripping down and beating him into the ground in a jail cell.
That was awesome.
The back in black.
That was.
It still weirds me out that Kingpin has ninjas,
It's a little weird, but that's an artifact of Shadowland. It's like nobody remembers or cares about Shadowland, but gosh dang it, if Dan Slott's not a pain to continuity.
Yeah. So Kingpin has ninjas.
I love it whenever they say, like, and back at the Shadowland stronghold, and I'm like, who the hell cares? I mean, it's just a Kingpin.
At Kingpin's headquarters.
Like, yeah.
All you say.
Kingpin's ninja headquarters.
Yeah, there you go.
And, of course, you have the little rat from Horizon there also, which Peter notices. But meanwhile, the more interesting thing is the fact that we have Kingsley in Phil's apartment.
He's good.
I
love Kingsley. And apparently Phil's been keeping all of his gear in his apartment, which anybody could see is probably the worst idea possible.
Yeah.
But
because Phil was wondering, he's like, I have this drone just flying around here. Wait, where did it go? But he also notices a creepy level of photos and internet pictures of Nora, which is
He's been sending the drone to spy on her.
It's a little skeezy.
Yeah.
But he does have a great line when he's suiting up. We goblins just can't resist blondes, but you should be throwing her off a bridge, not following her around like a school movie.
Wow.
I really am glad they made that twist as they did, because I love Kingsley when he's done right. And he's being
right. Nobody saw this coming, and like, we should have totally saw this coming.
Oh, yeah.
What did I say it a couple of ways? He's like, the Hobgoblin's dead? Don't worry, he's got an identical twin brother. And it's like, I knew that, and I still didn't cop to it.
Yeah.
Because I was too busy just feasting on the salty tears of fanboys.
But the moment they had that that reveal at the end, I think, was it the Lizard arc or something like that?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty much like the most worthwhile thing in the Lizard arc. Yeah. That's just because Lizard arc, it's a Lizard story, so yeah. Phil contacts Max at Horizon, and he's like, you know, don't call the cops, don't call the Avengers, just bring me this box. So he does. And there's also a little thing with Madame Web and how she passed out, had like a seizure. And there's this one little line where she said, his future will end in a flash of gold, and we see a golden Octobot climbing out of the ocean.
I wonder if this is something to do with Silk Spectre. I'm sorry. Silver Sable. I'm mixing up my double S.
Wow.
I was about to say, wait.
What? Yeah, no. I meant, yes. Silver Sable is what I meant to say.
Yeah, because obviously there's no way she's actually dead.
Yeah.
Considering we never saw her die eating on top of all of that.
She's like in an underwater paradise with the rhino.
Yeah. Yeah. They're making one little babies.
Went to.
Yeah.
Silver rhino babies.
Silver rhinos. Yeah. Yes.
That would be frightening.
Sorry. Anyway, chill there. That's
delivers the case to Kingpin's ninja headquarters. And he's like, you know that thing's booby-trapped when Kingpin takes it from him. He's like, yes, no. Fujiwara? And the ninja's like, you honor me?
Oh, thank you, sir.
Hey, I have another. Oh, you're dead.
And so, inside the suitcase is the goblin key.
The what?
The goblin key.
Is this a real thing?
With it, Norman Osborn's most valued cache of assets, from his goblin tech to the secrets he amassed as the head of Hammer National Security Agency. There is no greater treasure in the world, to Kingpin anyway. And at that point is when Kingsley makes his entrance as Hobgoblin.
Woo!
And, of course, Kingsley's not mad that, you know, Phil chopped his brother's head off. He's just mad that he sold his brand.
Which is sort of ironic, considering that...
Oh, he knows. He knows his hypocrisy. He called it out himself.
Yeah, but I mean, it's just still funny. It's just like, that's the crime. You stole the thing I stole! That's not cool, man.
Yeah, so the two hobgoblins go at it, and Kingpin holds his ninjas back. And, you know what? Hold on a second.
This
he's like,
be
let's
funny.
See which one wins. This shouldn't be a what he says. Yeah.
I love that they did that as a full page, an almost full page, though. I mean, that was a great...
And then it's the one panel below of Kingpin is like, wait, this should be the music.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Peter's already broken out of his bonds with everybody distracted by watching everything in the sky. And he's like, oh, I just found a rusty nail.
Oh, yeah.
And Max is like, hey, I brought you know, web shooters. And he's like, okay.
Sweet.
Sure, I used these during the testing phase.
Yeah.
I used those during that whole Spider Island thing.
Yeah. I got a lot of practice during Spider Island. So basically, just the rest of the issue is the goblins going at it, Kingsley revealing to Phil that he knows exactly who he is. And while Peter snags the goblin key and makes, it's like, you know, he has to be like almost like shitting a brick for the fact that it's like, okay, that spell from Doctor Strange is not working anymore, but I gotta get out of here alive.
Yeah.
Like, if Kingpin like really gets wise.
I mean, he did pretty good, like, right up to the end here, though, because, like, I mean, at least for cover story-wise, because he managed to crush the spider scrambler.
Yeah.
And, you know, then picked up the goblin key, and then, you know...
Well, it's really the goblin... Oh, no, yeah, he did, because he got the slider and trashed him into it,
Yep.
There is that. And Max was like, you know, if it wasn't for the whole Spider Island thing, I almost think you were... Think I was what? Nothing.
Yeah, there was this like little moment at the end where he's sort of explaining it away. He's like, "Oh yeah, I'm used to doing it in Spider Island." And then there's the moment when the ninja's gonna kill Max, and like he just shoots him to the wall, and he's like, "Nothing, let's go." And is that the moment where Max is like,
I think Max is
gonna cop to this very soon.
I think if one of the goblins doesn't, you know, run him through in the next issue or so.
Because
the issue ends with them, you know, making a temporary truce to kill the geeks before they try to kill
him. I don't think they could kill him, not to call anything out or anything, but Max is gay. They're not going to kill him.
Yeah.
They're not DC. They don't do that to their minorities.
Right. Yeah. No, but I mean... Awesome.
It's a good issue, and kind of wondering how this is all going to lead, because we only have 4 more issues left.
We only have 2 more issues to 698, and that's the one where he said the fit hits the shan. So, you know, I'm a little like, I'm getting a little anxious now. Yeah, you know, it's like we're getting close, kids.
Yeah, it's only going to be 2 months. So,
yeah.
The cover of the next issue is really kind of disturbing, though, because it's like Spider-Man on a spider glider.
Throwing
with spider bombs.
Spider bombs. It's awesome.
That's awesome. Yeah.
I think it's awesome.
He's like, I'm bringing my A game. Here we go, Spider Glider.
So I don't know. Like I said, I don't know what name was revealed. I don't know what name was revealed on the Twitter thing, but there was some discussion that what if this Tiberius guy becomes the replacement Spider-Man?
What?
That would make a lot of sense.
That seems a little odd.
Well, I mean,
everybody's just guessing at every supporting character possible at this point.
Yeah.
Well, but I mean, we had mentioned before that he may be the ancestor of Miguel O'Hara. So
yeah.
Ooh, that's.
You know, it would put. It would add the possibility of splicing some legitimate spider powers into the family line.
I still think that Spider-Man 2099 is going to travel back in time and become Spider-Man.
Spider-Man
Marvel now! He's going to be Marvel now, Spider-Man!
Right.
Marvel Van!
What's Van? It's Marvel now!
Yeah,
oh my God!
I can't even really... I feel like anything I would guess on who Superior Spider-Man is going to be is just kind of...
Well, no, I never read 99 Triplet, but isn't Miguel O'Hara adopted into the Stone family?
I don't remember. I mean, honestly...
His name is O'Hara, and the family name is Stone.
Yeah. I mean, I can vaguely remember some parts of it. Not all of it. His powers, I can remember how he got his powers, and I can remember a few of the stories, but like other than just like the look of that suit... I got nothing.
So basically, you remember what everybody else does.
Okay.
I remember that was a kind of a cool looking 90s costume, and I kind of want that back.
Right. All right. Well, we've established the extent of the way Triplett judged comics in the 90s.
And Peter David wrote it.
Everybody did.
Awesome.
Peter David wrote it, so it's got to be awesome because Peter David can do no wrong.
Surely. Obviously, it must have been.
Oh, yeah.
Except. Second She-Hulk series, that was kind of shit. Sorry,
Peter. Sadly, I have a lot of those, and I picked them up like a year or so ago, and I still haven't read them.
I would love to see like Peter David on a Spider-Man book again, where he's not having to tie into a crossover every three issues.
Yeah, yeah.
He did a Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man, I think was the last thing he did, wasn't it?
Yeah, he did. And it was, I think it was one of the best books at that time. It's just it ran from The Other to Civil War to Back in Black.
You had that kooky Uncle Ben story. That was really
Yeah, that was weird.
Speaking of kooky Uncle Ben stories, but just Uncle Ben... did you see that image that Steve Wacker posted as a collage of some of the other works?
I did not.
He posted it and said, here's some of the stuff I've been working on, and then said, spoilers, ? And all of it's pretty, you know, standard, the, you know, all the
Uncle Ben is going to become the new Spider-Man.
Well, there is a shot of Peter talking to Uncle Ben. In the bottom of the image, there's a frame of one of the comics, and it's a frame of Peter talking to Uncle Ben. So
this goes back to your Peter's gonna die theory.
Yeah,
he goes back in time and he takes a bullet for Uncle Ben.
Yeah,
somehow Uncle Ben becomes Spider-Man
because Spider-Man's timeline is not screwed up enough as it is.
Yeah, really.
So, wait, like, before he dies, he's like, somebody has to be Spider-Man. So he bites Uncle Ben, and Uncle Ben gets Spider-Man.
Oh, my God.
Peter bites
Uncle Ben. I just blown.
Spider bites Uncle Ben.
You know, that's no crazier than any of the other theories that have been put forward.
Oh, no.
So, yeah.
I've seen people suggesting Phil. I've seen...
I think Phil is right out at this stage.
Yeah, I mean...
Yeah, because Phil has been way outed as a bad guy at this point. Between Peter and Max.
I don't think that would go over too well.
Yeah, Max seems like he might not be too happy about that. So, but, okay, cool. Very good. Yeah, we are racing towards the end here, folks, so... Hold on. It's going to be crazy.
The spider roller coaster.
At the end of the show, when I was like, "What?
No, no,
Spider-Man." Yeah, okay.
Oh no,
yeah.
We're halfway through recommendations, so you know.
Yes.
Hey, okay. Read Scarlet Spider also.
Yes, read Scarlet Spider. Thank you, Ken. Thank you. You have very good taste in comics.
Hey, I'm just... Just by the way, I'm fine with that comic. I just don't read it.
I know.
That's all.
That's the problem. So, real quick, I know we kind of mentioned it in passing before the show. So that some Avengers
happened,
and I didn't
think about it on Twitter.
I didn't know the thing that was going to happen was going to happen in it.
Yeah.
He's like, it wasn't readable, but
I mean, I glanced through it and I was like, okay, well, that's interesting. And then
Bendis is really copping putting the toys back in the box attitude a lot more than I would have given him credit for. It's not like he's been trying to tell one big story across his run or anything.
No.
But,
are we going to spoil what happens?
I'm going to mention it here in just a second.
Yeah, I mean, it's right there. Okay. It's just that he is now repairing some of the more having done absolutely nothing with them as story points. He is now undoing some of the more disruptive elements that he brought in the course of things.
It's, it's been like for like, what has it been, 4 years now?
Yeah.
It's been like a series.
Yeah, it was real. I mean, it was during Invasion, so.
Yeah, so you're going back 4 or 5
and,
years. Yeah.
But I love these moments where Wonder Man keeps showing up. He's like, hey guys, is it cool if I play with you? No, okay.
No, you blew us up. I'm trying, man. I'm really trying.
Okay, guys. Well,
I realized this might not have been the best direction to take me in.
Months ago, I picked up one Avengers issue that was tying in AVX. I think he showed up and did that too. So they're still doing that.
Yeah, he's still showing up. Like, hey guys, are we cool? Can I help out? No, we hate you. Like, okay, I'm sorry.
Dude, we already got a jerk on the team. His name is the Red Hulk. Look, he's over there. Get away.
Okay, well, sorry again, guys.
And when did that, we also have Wolverine.
Bye. Poor Wonder Man.
Why? I mean, I really figured he was going to go down into the subatomic universe in this issue, because otherwise, what's the point?
Yeah,
of having him keep turning up.
He really did that. I mean, literally, there is no point other than like he shows up. He's like, "I'll help you out," and they're like, "No," and he's like, "Okay," and then leaves. And they're like,
"I mean, he's going to have to save them at the end of this story, surely." I mean, this is Chekhov's gun. He's got to.
Yeah,
do something to pay off at the end.
Yes,
of this thing.
Yes, exactly. You know what's funny though is like half of our audience just went, "What episode of Star Trek was that?"
Half of our audience should read more,
which is ironic.
Yeah, check off
something without pictures.
I don't remember that episode of Star Trek. Anyway, Janet Van Dyne is alive, and she's been living in the Microverse.
Yes! Thank God!
Yeah.
Did she say hi to Carnage on the way?
Apparently they're in a different part of the Microverse.
They're a Microverse. There is more than one, I think.
Yeah. She's in a different one.
I mean, I got really pissed off at this, actually, first of all, because I was like, no! Because the Mighty Avengers, she grew into an over-universe, turned her into the Infinite Magic. Oh, wait, no, Avengers Academy undid that. Never mind, sorry, carry on. My reaction to it.
Dude, when I read this, I was like, yes, Jonathan Hickman's Avengers is going to be awesome, because the Wasp is back.
Yeah.
And then I was like, I was reading it, and then you get to the end.
Anything awesome before, ever, but still.
This is going to be better because of this. But then I was reading it, and it got to the part where there's like an explosion or something, and it knocks all of them back, and I was thinking, Bendis, you dick. Are you going to bring the Wasp back and then she's going to, like, just die or something? And I was, like, thinking, am I going to turn the page and she's just going to die? Are you going to be a dick? And no, that didn't happen. But
no.
I was thinking that was going
to
happen.
They have to fight the Robo-Centaur to bring her back, you know.
But like McFeely said, it does seem like a very putting the toys back in the box sort of thing.
Yeah, it's very much like, okay, Bendis, you broke all of this. Now you got to fix it and put it back together so the other kids can play with it, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, I had to go check and look up and see if that robot centaur dude was supposed to be somebody. Because you don't give a dramatic full last page splash thing to anybody who's not a dude already.
Yeah.
Dude, it's Gozer. I'm looking at it. It's Gozer the Gozerian. I'm looking, it's Lord Gozer.
Lord Gozerian the Gozer, yeah. So, anyway.
They just don't hit money because it's Marvel. Marvel has to do that, you know, because they get in trouble if they don't. But it's Gozer. That's who it is.
The final enemy is going to be the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man then.
God.
God, I hope.
So, the actual thing I'm going to recommend, though, I mean, sure, check that out and all, but it's Bendis, so I couldn't bring myself to read it.
Why?
I can't. And the only thing of Bendis I've been able to tolerate is Ultimate Spider-Man. Like, that's it.
Yeah. Oh, that's kind of...
That's a good book.
That's kind of the given. It's like his one really good book.
Yeah.
And...
If you can get Alias, you should check Alias out as well.
So, otherwise, I'm like, I can't do it. I can't. Okay. Yeah. So, the actual thing I'm going to recommend is something that I started reading and then dropped because it was awful, and now I'm going to try it again, which is Firestorm. Now, you remember? Now, Firestorm has been through a bit of a change. When I first started reading it for the New 52 launch, it was Ethan Van Shiver and Gail Simone. Gail pretty quickly was off of that book. We don't even know why. She doesn't talk about it. You know, it's like, let's not even talk about it.
I don't even know why she was on that.
I don't know why she was on it.
Seems like such an odd fit.
It really was. And it was just like,
I mean, it basically seemed to be that it was Ethan Van Sciver's book, but he couldn't write. So he needed a writer who wrote it for him.
And then...
Because then she was replaced with Joe Harris, who then wrote Ethan Van Sciver's book for him again.
It's like, right. I want to do this cool scene here.
Yeah.
So the original concept of this book, though, was it was, you know, the fury of Firestorm, the nuclear men, and there was this idea that, like, all kinds
what
of
if
people
they were
could...
totally opposite.
Yeah, and it's like, you know, so you had Ronnie and Jason, and they were both Firestorms, and there was tons of Firestorms and all this stuff. And it just, everybody was like, what? And then what happened? And then why is there all this? And this doesn't. So after the Zero break, they've handed the book now to Dan Jurgens. Because love Dan Jurgens.
Yeah, I love Dan Jurgens and all, but that sure does sound like a Death March trumpet.
Doesn't it? A little bit.
I think I'm with that one.
So, yeah, this could be, if this doesn't turn around pretty quick, this could be the end. But
could
it's
be worse. If you, it could be worse. It could be Scott Lobdell.
Oh God!
Oh, God. I'm sorry.
Yeah. So this kind of, I mean, it's going in. I mean, this is some of the things that were set up earlier in some of the stories, but hadn't been touched on, which is Ronnie's mom and Jason's dad maybe kind of hooking up. You know, that's
hooking
cool.
Her.
They both know about their kids' powers. And now, hey, it's one Firestorm. It's the nuclear man, because they've got Ronnie as the main and Jason as the back, as the in-the-head character, I guess, is the way you're putting that.
So they don't turn into the big Firestorm thing anymore?
No.
Was it Fury?
Fury.
Is that what they call him?
Fury.
Fury.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No.
That seemed a bit on the nose to me.
Yeah. So so that's gone now. No, they combined...
I'm Super Shredder. I mean, Super...
And it's like, you know, if you love Dan Jurgens, it's a Dan Jurgens book. Because the first thing that happens, he starts fighting a big robot thing that you don't know what it is. And then there's all kinds of new one-off villains that are like, you know, characters with wacky names that sort of talk about their powers. But, you know, in this, there's like, you know, there's some of the sub-story, which is, you know, Ronnie's school is failing and he's going to need help. And there's three villains here, which are, of course, all new, never before seen villains. One of them is named Skull Crusher.
Nice.
Yes.
Really?
Yes. I mean, it's one of those deals where it's like, I just love it. I can't not. I mean, it's,
yeah, I'm not really knocking it. It's just,
it's
like,
so Dan Jurgens, though. I mean,
let's check my watch and see what year it is.
Yeah, really. Skull Crusher, of which the best scene is there's a whole shot of where Skull Crusher comes running up and punches Firestorm, and he's like, the name Skull Cruncher. Like, just says that to Firestorm, because that's what you do. And then she, like, the girl is called Relay, because she tells you that, and she has telekinetic
powers. My name's
powers.
Relay.
And then there's
save some for Skull Cruncher.
And there's a black
my
hole.
My mastery of the elements will allow me to easily destroy him. What say you, Relay?
Pretty much. Actually, that's almost exactly. Yeah, because Skullcratcher punches him. And then he's like, and then Firestorm's like, well, I can see why. And then apparently they're working for this organization that's trying to gather information on Firestorm. And, of course, Firestorm says, like, the line is like, you want to dance? Fine by me, Scully. Damn it. And then he tries to shoot it at Skullcrusher, and Black Hole jumps in front of him. He says, think of me as a living Black Hole! Oh. And then,
it's easy to do when that's your name.
Firestorm is complaining because he can't, he keeps fighting things. Like, he fought that giant robot and it had, like, unstable molecules or something as its shell, so he couldn't transmute it. And he's like, can I fight something, you know, that I can affect? And, of course, behind him is the girl, and she's like, not today. They call me Relay, and you're hardly my type.
Love it!
Anyway, so that's basically the entire comic. But it's, you know, it's Dan Jurgens, man. How can you not love it? It's just like, you could go pick up the first issue of Booster, and you could go pick up this, and you're like, oh yeah, Dan Jurgens.
I absolutely love it. I would absolutely love it if the issue ended and says, next issue, guest starring Booster Gold in the show Sleeve Interaction.
Well, I'll tell you. I'll tell you.
I would love that.
There is a shadowy figure in this.
Oh, boy.
I know, you're shocked by that as well.
It is the 90s, then.
And he does say...
It's a shadowy figure with a thing floating over his head. I don't know what that is. But
and
it
he's got some.
Like
he's got some shiny-looking armor clothes on, and he does says, which is, and his last line is, why I much return, and the next issue is called Revelations. So, yeah. And then there's a huge ad for Earth 1 Part 2. Anyway, but yeah. So, I mean, it's like, it's Dan Jurgens' first issue. I like it. I might actually keep reading it, because I'm a sucker for Dan Jurgens. I don't know why, but it just cracks me up. I mean, in some ways, in ways that it probably isn't supposed to.
But he's one of those writers that it's very much seems like he's still in a certain era.
Hey, say what you want about it. His Thor was fucking excellent.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't mean it as a bad thing at all. Oh, it was. You mean like back during Heroes Return? So.
Yeah, and I love Booster. You know, it's like he's made a lot of characters that I like. I mean, even for all of his like one-off, odd-named villains. I mean, which is just sort of like a Dan Jurgens thing now. It's just like, okay, it's like in his contract. All right, I just let you know, I'm going to create probably 50 villains over the course of my 12 issue run, and they're all going to have really weird names. But it's kind of like that classic. I guess that's one of the things I like about it is like it's got that classic.
Yeah.
It's classic. It's a classic comic book thing, you know, where you just have these like one-off villains show up, and you never know what's going to stick, you know. So. Dan,
well, that's what I meant by him
there.
Being, like, in a certain era. It's not a bad thing. No. It's just, it's different from, say, you know,
and I'm
Precious Central.
And I'm glad to see, Firestorm's powers back to, you know, what they were. This idea of two Firestorms and whatever. It's like, the title's more fun when it's like, they have to work together. You know, when you
otherwise, it's just a guy that shoots.
Yeah, otherwise it's just like this really powerful dude, but it's just like when they have to like really work together to make it work, that's a little bit more interesting. Then it's like the Odd Couple and Superman, you know, and that's a little bit more interesting.
Yeah.
So so we'll see. I'll give it a shot. I mean, like I said, I like Dan. So, all right, there you go. Firestorm, the Nuclear Man. Not men.
Still being published. DC right. 52.
DC 52. Yeah. We're on issue 13. It is not part of the Cancel 26, kids. So Yet. So, all right. Chris McFeely.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Notionally, I'm talking about FF number 23.
Okay.
Because this is the final issue of Jonathan.
The final issue!
with the Fantastic Four. Along with it, I mean, issue 611 of Fantastic Four came out 2 weeks ago, and that was the last issue of Fantastic Four. Any sense of finality was somewhat quashed by the giant, to be concluded in FF number 23, slapped on the last page of that one. Because the story doesn't follow over specifically. It's just wanted to let everybody know it wasn't over yet. And it's funny, actually, that we were talking about putting the toys back in the box, because that is really what Hickman has been doing with his... it's about 10 issues, really, isn't it, I guess, since the Forever storyline ended. And the... no, was it in the... I don't know, I can't even remember. No, that's not right. I can't count my numbers properly anymore. Well, anyway.
It's been a while.
He ended his 3-year story, anyway. And the... I guess it's about half a dozen or so issues that have come after that have been... That's the great thing, is that they haven't turned out to be throwaway things that he was just doing to mark time. They're all epilogue issues that tidy away... Not tidy away. Tidy away is the wrong word. That tie off all of the loose ends that were left after the end of his adventure. Things that didn't tie into the main story. We find out what happened to the Universal Inhumans. Law and Order got returned to the Negative Zone. The wizard storyline with Bentley was resolved. The whole AIM thing got wrapped up, and various and sundry other things. Just Doom? little whole left. Yes, well, Doom was issue number 611 of Fantastic Four. Just 2 weeks ago, it was dealing with the last step is Nathaniel and future Valeria and future Franklin have to go. And issue 611 was about how Valeria and Nathaniel left to go and save Doom. And it's a delightfully truncated story of many years of the Parliament of Doom, of how Doom built an empire and was its god, and how it all came crumbling down around him in the span of about 15 pages.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, remember he had that Infinity Gauntlet at the end.
Yeah, he had Infinity Gauntlet, and he used the two gauntlets to make a world of magic and science that worked together in harmony. Except they didn't. Whoops.
Oops.
As these things are wont to do.
Yes. And
you gotta think, if Doom's gonna create like a race of people or something, they're gonna be some backstabbing suckers, you know? They're just gonna be just like him. Okay. Yeah.
Wow. He built an entire society with all these priests of technology and religion and everything, and it was a holy war almost over Doom.
Oh my god.
Yeah. And the whole thing ended like they went and they saved Doom from himself and brought him back to the world, and Nathaniel went off to carry on his adventures, and Valeria took up Doom's place at the head of the Parliament and said, "Here, I can build."
No way, really?
Well, not really the head of the Parliament. Like, she stayed there in the bridge where everything had collapsed and where everything had crumbled. She stood in the ruins of Doom's world and said she could do it herself again, you know?
Wow.
Really, you know? So the very final issue here over in FF23 this week is about Franklin and future Franklin leaving. And it's a very low-key issue, as you may not be surprised to learn. We just see how Franklin has been helping younger Franklin manage his powers with the universe in the closet that we know Franklin created from some time ago. And we see how, like in this story, they have a system of rules which consists of like pieces of paper and a hat of all the ideas they've had for adventures, and they're only ever allowed to do one at a time. And that's how he's going to slowly control his powers, by pulling an idea out of a hat, making that idea be real in the universe in the closet and having that. But for this day, like he merges his powers with Franklin's and they have all of their adventures at once.
Whoa.
Super spies, vegetarian werewolves, video games, non-pacifist dragons, fighter jets, moloids, philharmonic. Yep. Superheroes, aliens, space chickens, vampire school teachers, motorcycles, Herbiepocalypse, and on until... So we get that, you know, we get future Franklin having a little chat with Leech. We just see, there's this great scene of Valeria teaching the future Foundation some stuff, and nobody can get it, and she's losing her patience with him, and Franklin just calms her with a wave. We see future Franklin go out for drinks with Johnny and Ben and telling them about the adventures that they will have, or they might not have, because they have changed all of history in the course of Hickman's run. They've come back in time and changed their destiny, so this stuff might never happen. But he tells this story about how, what was it? It was
sense.
Him, Ben, Johnny, and the Impossible Man were like the four last people left at a big apocalyptic battle. Avengers, New Defenders, Imperial Guard, Future Foundation, and X-Men all defeated. Very serious apocalyptic stuff going on. Right before we made our final charge against Nimrod, you got blasted by an Omega Sentinel and it destroyed all your clothes, which normally isn't that big a deal, but that was when you turned human, after which you simply refused to make our final charge in the buff. But due to some fast thinking, you overcame that obstacle and saved the world, Uncle Ben. It's just too bad you had to do it wearing the Impossible Man as pants.
Wow.
It's worse than I thought. Yeah, and that's just his night to say goodbye. And then, like, the last scene of the story, so he says goodbye to Reed and Sue and explains, like, Reed understands that he has to go for preserving the sanctity of the timeline. It's just wonderful, touching scene wherever. Just before he goes, Sue asks him to stop, and she and Reed, it's an opportunity that no one can ever have, where just seeing her son grown up in front of her has nagged at Sue for a long time, and she and Reed finally ask, did we do a good job, son? And they're like, a perfect one. And he's gone.
Oh,
it's immensely touching. Both these issues have featured a closing essay from Hickman, which is a really great read in and of itself, and I'm not going to read it out here because it's just really great. But it struck me, well, one thing he says here, when giving an interview early on, sometime after their critical success was being recognized, he was asked, what did they do to make it relevant again? And he lied at the time because he didn't want to give away the one reason that he had, the one rule he had for himself. And he tells what the rule is here in the course of this essay. And the point that he makes is that, I'll just read out this one sentence, the world sucks. And I'm not saying this as an anachronist or an idealist, but one of the reasons for this condition is the expectation of family as a thing of permanence is dying. And I read that and I was like, that was speaking to me. Now, I'm not going to go off on one here or anything. I have no reasons for it in my personal life or anything. My family life is absolutely fine. But that is actually one of my great laments of modern society. Just for me personally, that's just something that saddens me, is the idea that family as a thing is just dying and not perceived with the level of importance that it used to be. And that just sent me on this weird spiral back through the whole of Hickman's Fantastic Four to realize that that was the undercurrent of his work all this time. And that being perhaps one of my great sadnesses in the world, if you'll pardon me for getting all maudlin for a second. It makes me wonder, like, if, like, we had all the grand, world-shaking, cosmic high concepts from, you know, Celestials and timeline changing and everything, but at the heart of it, that was always really there. And, you know, he runs through all of these things, like, what is it that made Reed choose his family? What made Johnny sacrifice himself? What broke Ben Grimm? What made Sue strong? And it was love, as Hickman says here in the thing, you know. Mm-hmm. And it's just really, I never really thought about it before, but if that has been the undercurrent of his run, I wonder if that, on a major subconscious level, was why his run spoke to me as much as it did. And it's just that this final issue, not to go back over the whole series and pick it apart or anything, but just to say this last issue is a really understated, subtle, intimate affirmation of the overall message of Hickman's Fantastic Four, which is that with your family, whether, you know, it's your biological family that you're born into, or whether it's the family that you make around you with your friends and relations, and anything, the group of people you build around yourself, you know, whether it's through their guidance or their influence or their inspiration or what they motivate you to do or motivate you to not do, it's through all of these things that anybody can be fantastic. And that's Jonathan Hickman's Fantastic Four. And Matt Fraction's got a hell of a lot to live up to.
Oh,
yeah.
It is. I would not take his job for all the money in the world.
On the other hand, it really makes you sit there like, what is Avengers going to be like then?
Well, yeah, I mean, here's, you know, the current king of high concept out of Marvel, you know, is going to be
I'm pretty much the headline. What should be the headliner book for the company right now?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's going to be interesting. Wow. Well, that's great.
It's really weird to me that this is a thing that I know do not get to look forward to every month, and it's kind of sad, isn't it? Yeah, it's a hugely uncommon thing with Marvel lately. I mean, Marvel have definitely got this going on a lot more than DC at the minute, where we've got writers on books who are having big, distinctive runs on books. We've got Bendis's Avengers, even though it doesn't have a grand overall direction or anything. We've got Brubaker's Captain America. We've had Fraction's Iron Man. You know, we've had Hickman's Fantastic Four, Gillen's Journey into Mystery, which we'll be talking about in a little while. Things like that, which are going to stand out as like historical runs that will be spoken of. You know, it's not like that time some guy wrote that book. It was like their run with a capital R.
For better or worse.
You know? Yeah, for better or worse, yeah. I mean, Hickman has done a run here that is going to stand up in the top five Fantastic Four runs ever, thus far. You know,
maybe it's one. It's a top comic run. I mean, fantastic, but
Lee and Kirby, Byrne, Wade and Ringo, and Hickman. You know, that's the top four. Maybe not necessarily in that order, but like it's going to sit alongside what those three teams did.
Yeah.
As one of the best Fantastic Four runs ever. And although like all these things are ending now, this one, because it is a story that has a start and a middle and an end, it has always conceived as this finite 3-year thing. It is a little piece of something that is gone now. It leaves me sad that, and I mean, it's not like Fantastic Four are going away. And Hickman, he hasn't put all the toys back in the box. I mean, it's not like he undid his whole run. He didn't Morrison it up or anything. He didn't undo his whole run at the very end. He just took away the more intrusive elements of the future characters and the big changes in status quo we'd created for a lot of characters. The Future Foundation still exists, and all the kids are still there, and that's a thing that will be in Fantastic Four going forward. But
it's not like what Bendis just did with Wasp.
Yeah, we brought it back. It's not like the Avengers couldn't have kept turning without her, you know.
Right.
Yeah. But it's a very uncommon thing where it's hard to imagine anybody just stepping onto Fantastic Four right now. After Fantastic Four having been so unremarkable, basically, since the end of Wade and Waringo's run up until now, even with Miller and Hitch being put on it to try and propel it up into something.
Yeah.
Hickman has come to own that title like nobody has owned that title in a decade. And it's very, very strange to think he won't be on it anymore. I don't know how to feel. I have all of these emotions.
I'm sad he's going, but I'm like looking at this image of FF by Fraction and Mike Allred, and I'm thinking, my God, this looks kind of awesome. Yeah. He's saying at the end where it's like Mike Allred's art, and it basically looks like Ecstatic 2 is what it looks like, you know? I'm looking forward to that.
Well, yeah, and you know, and again, hopefully Avengers may pick up, you know, not in the same theme, but and Hickman's good at that. I mean, picking a different kind of theme or idea.
I mean, if anything, it's going to be bigger.
Yeah.
Well, just think quality. It can't be this.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, family is at the root.
I'm so glad they picked him. I mean, of all the writers, yeah, he was the guy I was praying for, and I wasn't sure if we're actually going to do it or not.
Yeah. Yep.
I mean, the Fantastic Four is never an easy task for anybody to take on, and more writers have probably botched it than have been really successful with it, because it's kind of dated as a concept, and it has this oldie-worldy notion of family at its heart, and just Hickman really find a way to tap into that and turn it into the thing that has fueled the book. And everybody always says, oh, family, whatever. We're bringing the family back to the Fantastic Four, is what every new writer says when they come onto the Fantastic Four. And I'm like, yeah, I'm pretty sure the last guy had it down a little better than you did.
Yeah.
But not, you know, that's not going to be what you're going to be able to say about this. So who knows what's going to come next. But you can't bring that to Avengers. Avengers are about superheroics. It's not about family, you know, so... Where's it going to go?
Well, they kind of are a family. I mean,
but you don't want it to be that. It's like, I don't want Avengers to be about family. He did that in Fantastic Four. I want this to be about something else. You know,
I want it to be super sciencey space adventure something, but I don't want it to be that. But they are still sort of have that family element, though, is what I'm saying.
It's the one. I mean, we got characters that have been there forever, like Hawkeye or Cap. Yeah.
But it'll be interesting to see, like, what concept he kind of picks and then runs with and how that fits together. So,
as long as it features Kane, I'm happy.
Well, so that's goodbye to a book that's been with us for nearly our whole time here on Fanboy Versus.
Yeah, I know. That's been
fairly well.
That was one of the first things that was really like a recommendation you got to get, and really, and I mean,
Prince.
I'm gonna do the trades for the post. You know, the end of that story, the major story.
You should.
I think there's a little too much of it to make into an omnibus, but they really should.
Yeah. So I'll just get. I mean, I'll get those couple pieces that way, but.
Two omnibuses.
Right. Well, let's.
Might not be as much. Might not be enough to make one. Let me make one omnibus out of it. But speaking of something that deserves to be collected in an omnibus.
So, no one else could cover this but Chris McFeely. So, you get to go back to back again, sir. We're going to talk. The End of Everything Burns.
Can you read the part in the front, please? I would love it if you say in the beginning.
I mean, this is another book that has now come to an end. But the book's not actually over. Like, it's going to carry on with a new writer and new characters and new direction, a new creative team next month. But this is the end of Kieran Gillen's journey into mystery. And this is the ending it was always meant to have. This is the conclusion of the 31-issue storyline that Kieran Gillen always intended to tell. And, you know, that makes it special in and of itself because... how often does that happen? Like, because this was not a high-selling book. It was an absolute critical darling, but it was not a high-selling book. But Marvel backed it, and they gave it time, and they let it tell its story without interference. Anytime it ever did a crossover, it was to serve itself. in a way that, you know, even Christos Gage must be envious of. Crossovers only ever served Journey into Mystery.
Mm-hmm.
And we are now at the very end, and we have another one of the books... classic, legendary, will go down in the annals of history recap pages at the very start, which is a parallel to the very first one. In the beginning, many of the answers ended up being Loki. Who brought the world to the brink of destruction and then died to save it? Loki. Who was resurrected through a contract with Hel into a mischievous young street rat only to be found and brought to Asgardia by his brother Thor? Loki. Who was the known loner who forged the closest of friendships with a girl named Leia who was born from the right hand of Hela herself? Loki. Who began a game to better the world through trickery, who used his infamous cunning wit to connive and double-deal the villainous and destructive forces of the world to bring peace to the Nine Realms, and in doing so salvage a name once loathed and cursed throughout creation? Loki. But now the game is almost over. Who will win? Who will lose? Time's up, little Loki. This is the way the story ends. Not with a bang, but with a journey into mystery.
I will say, just from having listened to you guys, it's been like the one book that I have regretted not like picking up, and it's like one that I definitely am going back to.
Trade paperback now.
Yeah. I would hold out just a little longer and see if they omnibus.
Yes.
Because it's massively deserving of an omnibus. So, following the end of Everything Burns, in which Loki managed to save all of creation, along with a little bit of help from Thor, but not much, Leia pointed out to him something he had never realized before, which was that Ikol, the magpie, who is always around him, who represents the last fragment of the spirit of his old self, the original Loki, is only in his mind. It's not really there. No one else can see it.
Yeah.
And the reason that Leia could see it was because she was always a product of Loki's mind. He wrote her into the serpent's story, and that's why she could. And with this, Loki returns to the book that he read and the little realm that was hidden between the pages of a story, where he converses once again with old Loki's spirit. And essentially, I don't know how much I want to really give a blow by blow of this because.
I need you to fill in the blanks for me, though, sir, because I'm like...
It essentially turns out that everything has, in the grand tradition of Loki, been a trick. It has been... It was old Loki's intention, always, not that he would be reincarnated and free to change. But little Loki has always been his puppet who would change for him, redeem his name, and then Loki would, the spirit of Loki that still existed in Ecole would step back in, take him back over, and step into this new life that little Loki had created for him, because in the grand scheme of things, Loki cannot change. He required someone else to change for him, and that he could then trick and steal away from. Like, how awesome is that? How heartbreakingly awesome is that?
It is very Loki.
Yes. And, you know, that Gillen even finds a way to fold the point one issue in, which was the only issue of this that's been written by another author, which by Rob Rohde. You may remember in the point one issue, we met the Teller, which was a creature that fed on stories.
Yeah.
And it turns out that back in the original narration, the original wonderful florid narration that I read out 2 years ago, that began the first issue of Journey into Mystery about the journey of the magpies, that the last magpie, before it went back to Asgard, visited the Teller and told him that, well, when Loki's tale was coming to an end, that the Teller was to inform Mephisto of the weapon Loki had created, which in this case is the last lingering plot thread from Journey into Mystery, which was the Crown of Fear that Loki created during the terrorism myth storyline, which Mephisto has now seized control of, having been told of it by the Teller, and in return for this, Ico gave the Teller Loki's story. And we see the book that Ico gives him, and it's like, if they do an omnibus, and this needs to be the cover.
Oh, yeah, easy, yeah.
Yeah.
Greek foil embossed with the swirl. Journey into Mystery, a comedy in 30 parts, or a tragedy in 31.
Yeah.
And it's like, because, yeah, if things end at the... You know, I'm not exactly sure what makes up the 31 count. I think that count omits the prologue to Everything Burns that was in the pages of Thor. It counts like the issues of New Mutants and the issues of Thor that made up Exiled and Everything Burns, but I think it omits like the prologue to Everything Burns and maybe the point one issue too, and then that brings the count to this being the number 31. You know. Because if everything had ended with last issue, it would all be good. But no, this tragic part 31st has arrived. And it's that Mephisto has captured the Crown of Fear and is ready to take Satan's throne with the power it has granted him. And it will be hell everywhere. And the only way to stop it is for the Crown, which was forged out of Loki's thoughts and dreams, is for Loki to cease to exist. He cannot just die, because, as it says here, a dead you is still you. So he has to allow himself to be taken and overwritten by old Loki again, so that he will utterly cease to be in every respect, so that the Crown will cease to be too. And Loki finds himself, you know, trapped in one last game. How does he allow himself to continue to be and win this as well? And seemingly resigning himself to his inevitable fate, he enters into he is granted a chance to say goodbye by old Loki as one final deal. Three conversations, none of which can reveal the truth. Three private conversations. No witnesses to them must remain amongst us. If you transgress, you forfeit all immediately. So he goes back to the world to try and have three conversations to try and find his way out of it. He goes back to Leia's dirty great hole in the ground, and he says, he just announces to the world at large, I'm going to hell. Well, I'll open a portal for you, but ha! Monologue, not a conversation. And jump. Yeah. Through the... I know, it's like, oh, you think maybe this is going to turn around. Maybe it'll be right. Maybe all will be well. He avoids talking to Leia because he doesn't, you know, he can't waste words. First tries to ask one of, he goes to hell, he asks if one of the Disir will eat him, and we know that they utterly annihilate them, eat their souls, and they are completely gone, but they cannot do that anymore because he freed them from their curse. He has cut that avenue off to himself by saving them, you know, and that's one thing that can't happen. So for his next step, he speaks to Hela, But knowing that she cannot do anything for him, he makes a request of her and asks that Leia, to save her from what he knows he will become if old Loki takes him over, he asks her to send Leia away, a long way away. I don't want anything to do with her. And Hela's just, yeah, I concur. Leia of Hell will be sent to the ancient past. And Leia disappears through a portal, swearing vengeance upon Loki. And then, as long as there is a heart in my chest, I will hit you. And away she fades. And that's all we say of Leia.
Mm.
Except Hela makes a few ambiguous remarks. By the time she grows up, she'll be more than capable of dealing with the likes of you. What? Think about it. You're a smart boy. I'm sure you'll figure it out. Yeah. Leia's Hela.
No, Loki was never Hela's father, but for the word made flesh, that was never the only option.
Only option.
Yeah.
Leia. I mean, Loki created Leia in the serpent's story. She lived through until the now, and has now been sent back in time by Hela, where she will go on to become Hela, and then from herself spawn the original Leia, who then re-merged with Leia at the end of the terrorism myth, the Manchester God storyline.
Oh, because it's sort
of... It's a close time loop.
It's like a weird anagram, too. It's a
Leia has an anagram of Hela, yes. I mean, that was... Everybody thought that was just supposed to be the clue that she was made from Hela's hand, and that she was part of her, and that she was of her. And whenever Leia, you know, she re-merged with Hela, and everybody was like, oh, my God! Was gone, and then so when Leia turned back up as a servant of Surtur and everything burns, it was like, what the fuck is going on? We don't even. And then you know, then it turned out that the Leia who served Surtur was the Leia that Loki had written into the serpent story, and then after everything ended with everything burned, she turned into the Leia that we see here in this story, who then sent back in time, becomes Hela, and from Hela has created the original Leia. It's and of course, like the Norse myth says that Loki is Hela's father.
Correct. Yes.
Which, of course, has never made sense in Marvel continuity. Until now. And then perhaps the sweetest scene in the entire book is where Loki has his last conversation with Thor and asks him, if I go bad, promise me you'll kill me. And Thor refuses that he'll never do it, you know. And Loki says, it's inevitable. We all know how the story ends. And Thor promises he'll never give up hope in him. But Loki can't even have hope in himself. And so he returns to Loki. And he asks, what comes next? And Loki tells him a story of how what will happen next. Mephisto's crown will fail. He will be deposed. Even the Hela, like Leia, Hela, and no, who is that? That's I forget which one of the Deceer that is. Will hook up with Tyr, and even the Hellhound and Thori will be together again. The Manchester Gods will rise in a new way. Volstagg will be a normal man and not King of Asgard again. Peace will reign. Everything will be good. And in the ancient past, you know, we see a beautiful field of flowers and red trees. And in it romp young Loki and Leia. They finally smile at one another and lay down among the grass. And you turn the page. The end.
Yeah.
Yeah. No. No. I mean, I think it would be slightly more effective if there was an advert on the facing page. But the next page is like Loki's. No. That's a pretty lie. But it won't be like that at all. I'll be gone forever. It's beyond any of our power. To end the story like that, and at that moment he just looks over his shoulder like maybe someone else is out there controlling this story right now.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a deeply eerie image, you know. It's the hour is in bold. It's beyond any of our power to end the story like that. You know, it's not fourth wall breaking for the sake of humor, and I don't remember the last time a comic did that.
Yeah,
you know, like he knows he's as a god, he's the subject of a story as well. You know, and then Loki says, you know, that's it, and I'm sorry, I'm sure you are. Not enough though, because I was thinking, you do know that you've lost, right? No. I will change. No, you won't. They won't let you. I played and I won. I changed. You're just being yourself. And it's so painfully, agonizingly... It's a pinch meta. It's a pinch meta when they say they won't let you. And it's like, no, the grand forces that govern the story of Loki will never let Loki not be Loki. Sooner or later, whether it's a few months from now, whether it's years or decades from now, Loki will be Loki again. Mm-hmm. He will need a villain, and Loki will be Loki again. This story can never end any way other than this. They can't end the story any other way. It's almost like when Loki turns to the thing, it's like even Gillen knows he can't end the story any other way. So it's almost as if he's ending the story this way so that someone else won't have to. It's a crushingly tragic end. Mm-hmm. But Loki finds the way to claim a Pyrrhic victory in it by claiming that he actually did change. And as much as this was what the old Loki wanted from him, was something he could never do. He has done what old Loki never could, and he changed. He won in that respect. But it doesn't change the fact that, well, I mean, I guess we're going to have to talk about these final two pages. I don't really want... It's just this sudden bout of horrifying savagery as young Loki bites down into Ekoel in his hands. And screams, "I win!" And then he eats the dead magpie whole. And old Loki's spirit fades away over the altar that it floats over, upon which Loki's traditional horned crown rests. And young Loki reaches up and lifts the crown down, and just lays back and clutches it to himself and says, "Damn me! Damn you all!" And stares out at the audience. That's the closing image. Now, I completely and utterly misread this when I first read it. I thought that him biting into Ekoel, the way that he says, I thought that him biting into Ekoel was him killing his older self.
Ah, yeah.
And destroying him in that sense. And he was...
Boy,
he
that'd
was,
be nice, wouldn't it?
But that he was damning himself, because that meant all of this horror was destined to happen. If his crown would work and there would be hell on earth, this was all destined to happen. But I realize upon rereading and discussing and reading breakdowns of the comic that when Loki tells him it is time on the previous page, it must happen now, he says to him, "Swallow the lie."
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's what
he consumes Ekoel and takes old Loki back into himself again, and old Loki back in child Loki's body. This it makes more sense whenever he says, you know, never forget it. He is leaving a threat with him. He is going, and he is leaving this for him to remember. And Loki realizes this is the truth. You know, he is damned, and he looks out at the audience. Is it the writers? Is it the creators? Is it, you know, the architects of his story? And damns us all, for we won't let him change. And now he is just himself. He is Loki. Little Loki is gone. He is no more. This is truly the end of his story.
Danny,
and it is the most crushingly tragic thing I think I've read in a comic in I don't know how long. I mean,
it's so contrary to the way that we think of changes and things and what you do, like, in your run. I think you made a good point when you say that, you know, there's a lot of things that writers and editor teams and things do on a comic where they change a character, you know, and, you know, okay, well, this is going to be the way it's going to be. And then inevitably that gets undone at some point. For some reason, there's a good story reason, you know, that gets undone. You know, not a great example, but an example would be like Sandman, where, you know, he had this whole period of time where he was, you know, a good guy and maybe even an Avenger, I think, for a while. And yet Dan Slott took him back and turned him into a villain again.
I think he got turned back a couple of times.
Yeah, he's been turned back in the...
But, Yeah, and
Mackie and Byrne. Let's not attribute that to Slott. I'm just
well, okay, one. But I'm just saying, yeah, okay. For the point I'm making, yeah, which yeah, is yeah. that you know,
yeah.
you can try to change the stripes on a zebra, and it doesn't stick. And so,
where's a striped shirt?
You know, yeah.
I mean, you know, it's within the fictional remit of Journey into Mystery to present the lives of these gods as governed by story rather than the cold hard facts of history. But it also transforms into a slightly meta thing where Loki, as a god, is aware that he, you know, unlike, you know, the popular epithet of the real world, you know, we're not the architects. We you know, they say, oh, you make your own life, you do this for yourself, you know, blah, blah, blah. But in the case of Loki, as a god within the fictional world of this story, and as a character within a comic book, he is not the architect of his own story. He is not the writer of his own life. And he knows it. He knows it is not within his power to control the outcome of his life. And he resigns himself to this terrible tragedy, just leaving this last stinging barb for the guy who is essentially coming in to replace him, which is that he played, and he won, and he defied 40 years, 50 years of comic book convention by being the Loki who changed. And he's gone now, but his legacy will last. And old Loki is still damned and trapped in everything that's ever bound him, and everything that the entire scheme, the entirety of Journey into Mystery, and everything he ever did in Siege was supposed to lead up to. Little Loki's beaten him. Because he hasn't changed at all. Loki changed for him. All he's done is redeem his name. But Loki himself has not changed. He's just used an agent to try and change for him. But whenever he is gone, all that's left is Loki. And why does the fire burn? If we go back to the very first Gil and Loki story. I have all these emotions!
I know, it's...
I mean, oh, okay, so God, that's this issue, but let's just journey into mystery. It is not something we have seen the like of in quite some time, and it's not something we're likely to see the like of again in a hurry. It is very hard to sum up altogether. What's fascinating about Journey into Mystery is the audience that it has tapped into. I mean, it is a critical darling, for starters. But something we haven't actually talked about on this show is this book has got a colossal following on Tumblr.
Really?
Where
really?
Young people, like legitimately little tiny not people, are following this book. People who don't really normally read a lot of comics are following this book, are loving this book. Smart, intelligent, creative people who are cosplaying and producing stories and art, like, by the ton on Tumblr. Something that no other comic is doing on Tumblr. It has tapped into this fabled audience that everyone always claims is out there for comics, but that nothing ever happens to tap into. Journey into Mystery has bridged that gulf. Is it with its intense, dramatic, emotional storylines? Is it the book's total lack of fear about building your audience up and then ripping their heart out and stomping on it over and over and over again? there's just no other book that has created such a universally popular fandom around itself from such what is now, like, amongst comic book fandom, considered such an unusual group of people of an age, of a gender, of a mindset. Who take this as their jumping off point to create new things. It fires creativity in these people who go out and author their own stories. It is the very living definition of how it is not within any one person's power to author the end of this story. There are people out there already creating new stories for little Loki and Leia, where maybe they do get to have that happy ending. And it's all stories. It's quite humbling when you really sit and think about how the little book that could, a book that, you know, I mean, that I've been cheering since it launched, I mean, which has so betrayed me with its final issue, ripping itself away. I mean, you know, even my reading of it is not the initial reading I had of it is not a happy ending. It's not a cheerful ending for it, but it's not as bad as
but
what
how it, I mean, I guess, you know, not to critique it, but it's like, how else could it have ended?
This is it, you know. It's a,
you know, it's like the, yeah,
what happened was that, I mean, it could have ended the way Everything Burns ended, where Loki had finally achieved the goal set out for him in the very first issue. He had successfully changed and redeemed his name by saving everything, and he was with Leia again, and it could all have gone on, but the inevitability was that it is not within the remit of Loki, within the world of fiction, to ever not be Loki. He will always be Loki. He will always be Thor's villain. There's a great tragedy about him in the best-written Loki stories like that, where he is bound like this, and it was inevitably going to happen. And I think Gillen, in dealing with, you know, writing a story about the nature of stories, realized this and decided to make that the inevitable end of his story, because he knew that regardless of what he did, there would never be any permanence about it. And by ending it like this, has absolutely sealed its permanence in history. This is a book that is destined to be appearing on like top 10 cult favorites from the 2010s lists, yeah, in years, mm-hmm, to come. It is just
I like the idea that, you know, like, we're Transformers fans, you know, we're very nostalgic for whatever era Transformers that we like. I like the idea to think that maybe this is someone's Loki. This is some impression, like you're talking about, impressionable audience. This is their Loki, and when they grow up, someone, maybe they want to, yeah, maybe they're going to write comics. Maybe this is the thing that they're nostalgic for, and it goes into that whole story thing.
And they'll,
know,
write a really good Loki, but it's going to be
they're
the
Loki,
villain Loki, not this Loki. That's what I mean. It's like, and that's exactly, and that's why I sort of asked the question. It's like, how did you expect it to end? Of course it's going to, I don't know that, I'm not saying I saw it coming. I'm saying it's like, once it happened, you're like, well, of course. It couldn't end any other way. It's like, this is the way the story had to end in order to bring the entire concept full circle. You know, to bring it all the way back around, where, you know, character,
and it is a closed circle completely.
Yeah, I mean, it is. I mean,
tragically so.
And it sort of, you know, the questions come then, what comes after? We talk about seeing Loki in Young Avengers.
That was going to be,
and it's little Loki.
And it's,
yeah, it's little Loki.
It's still, yeah, well, Kid, it's Loki. Not. It's Loki little.
it's a little Loki.
Little.
Yeah, well,
it really brings into question what he's going to be in that series.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, and it totally. Yeah.
The story, although this creates this, it is a closed circle, and this story is done.
The Marvel Universe goes on.
The universe goes on around him, and where does Loki go next? What is the next thing to happen? I mean, as far as the book's success goes in its fandom, I mean, I'm certain that you can, to some extent, point to the Thor film and the Avengers film, probably even more so, as a source of some of these younger fans coming in and looking. Because, I mean, you know, Tom Hiddleston alone has got a lot of ladies' attention on Loki.
No!
And, you know, a lot of them... But these young ladies who are Tumblrites, you know, I don't think there's any website on the world which has as little control of its emotions as the people who post on Tumblr. And for young fans of Tom Hiddleston's portrayal of Loki to go looking for Loki comics and find this, it was a perfect storm that wound up accomplishing what Marvel always hopes will happen. With these movies getting people to buy the comics and everything. It didn't ratchet up the sales. It never sold hugely. It didn't even really sell respectably, to be honest. I think it was done in the 20,000 mark, you know, which is done on the top end of the bottom rung, you know. But its audience was the audience that Marvel is always trying to capture, you know. I mean, one of the sheer, like, unbelievably coolest things about this whole issue is that the first letter on the letters page is from Tom Hiddleston.
Is it really? I didn't even look. I hardly look at letters pages anymore.
Well, I always read the letters page to Journey into Mystery. In fact, I always read the letters pages because they're so rare. I just like reading them. But the first letter is from Tom Hiddleston. He writes, Dear Kieran, you and I see Loki the same way. One dark, anarchic, bottomless black hole of rage, hatred, pity, and pain. An exiled outcast, a lost and lonely agent of chaos who wouldn't know what to do with familial forgiveness if it walked up to him in the street and slapped him in the face.
Wow. That's awesome.
I've had as much fun playing him as you've clearly had writing him. If your run of, I know your run of Journey into Mystery has been hugely popular, and what an enormous honor to share Loki's legacy with you.
Wow.
Wow!
Written by Gillen, right?
Sorry?
The upcoming Young Avengers is written by...
It is, yes. I mean, Gillen is still against carrying perhaps on all odds or all expectations, is still getting to control the direction of Loki right now, you know. And, I mean, Gillen signs off this letter speech, with, you know, a closing out letter thanking everybody. And, you know, it's been a total pleasure. It's been an equal and total pain. Both feel irrelevant compared to the simple fact it was totally worthwhile. I consider myself lucky to have been able to do this. And finally, thanks to you lot, who have improved my life every time I turned on the internet. Write your own happy ending. Be the author of your own story, because Loki cannot.
Mm.
Nice.
It is... Again, what more can you say? What more can you say? I've said enough at this stage.
Yeah.
Once again, I wouldn't... I'm not going to say, oh, Catherine Immonen's got big shoes to fill, because she's coming onto the series next. I mean, the series is, as I've said in past episodes, absolutely taking the best possible route it could take, which is new creator, new character, a different corner of the
whole
world.
Different thing.
Because yeah, nobody yeah. can follow this.
Oh, no. No.
And she's not trying to. You know, she's doing something entirely different with the title. But all I know is, if I wasn't already excited for Young Avengers, you could sign me up right now.
Yeah,
that's going to be... I mean, because now it's like, you know, it's new it's old Loki with the new Loki world. You know, it's like, you know what I mean? It's like...
I mean, the full extent, I mean, does he carry with him the experiences of young Loki? Does he feel what young Loki felt now that he... we don't know. We don't know. We're going to have to wait. I figure, I imagine... Loki is going to be a figure of quite some enigma in the pages of Young Avengers for some time.
And I was already looking forward to it just because I was interested to see an ongoing Young Avengers book that was by a different creator.
But you could actually deliver a book on a monthly basis.
Hey, crazy.
Yeah, that's basically it.
When's Young Avengers thing? When is that coming?
That is
part
in
of
February.
November?
Oh, wow.
February. Okay. Sorry, not February. January.
Oh, still, that's a long time.
Still a couple of months away, yeah.
So yeah. In Superior Spider-Man or in January?
Yeah, right? It's Superior Spider-Man and Savage Wolverine are the January launches.
Savage.
Awesome.
So that is Journey into Mystery. It's a beautiful heartbreak of a final issue that, if you followed this from the outset, is going to leave you with what I believe they call on Tumblr, feels.
Feels. Wow. It's just, I don't know. Yeah.
Absolutely deserving of being put in an omnibus. I mean, I've seen people say that they were kept away by the crossovers, and I'm like, congratulations on totally misunderstanding the book and how everything that it's ever done has, oh, I didn't want it to fear itself. Like, well done, because everything that the thing has done has been built upon what it did as part of its tie-in to Fear Itself, which could not have been done without Fear Itself being there to build for it to build up.
I don't even know how a person could have read Fear Itself and not picked up Journey into Mystery, honestly. Yeah. That would have made no sense whatsoever.
You know, where Christos Gage is things in Avengers Academy or Avengers Initiative always take a crossover event and manage to fold it in such a way that embiggens the book, Journey into Mystery has done the opposite and actually embiggened the crossover.
Yeah.
That
it actually made that crossover worthwhile.
And I mean, as we've said before, Everything Burns was just a Journey into Mystery story that was so big that Thor got sucked into it. It had nothing to do with what was going on in Thor. It was just extra issues of Journey into Mystery.
Thor helped a little, you know.
Even Exiled, which, to be fair, Exiled really didn't have much of a reason to have the New Mutants in it. Even that was the end cap on the Desir story, which Gillen had been writing since his time on Thor months before Journey into Mystery even started. Every crossover was made to serve that book. It has been one of the most amazingly consistent Marvel titles published for the last 2 years, month on month, rock solid in terms of quality. And, you know, hey, advanced spoilers, it's absolutely, totally, no question, going to be my pick for our end-of-year show when I say best ongoing title.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah,
I mean, think has topped the ongoing quality of Journey into Mystery. And Marvel should really put it in an omnibus so everybody can just enjoy it in a lovely, big, complete format like that. But failing that, for the love of God, get the trades. It's yeah. all over. Yes. It's like...
I'm going... You know, I fell behind, and then... All right, so
oh,
I fell
oh,
behind.
It seems the chat died.
Yeah, the show fell off, unfortunately. Oh. So, somewhere we ran out of bandwidth or something. I don't know. But anyway, so they'll get all this later. They get to tune in. Sorry. But, yeah, I think I had a profound thought, and now it's just gone. I lost
Sorry.
It. So that's okay. But
I'll fill that in. JD-like book.
JD-like book. Oh, I fell off. Let's say I fell off, you know, but I think somewhere around the Exiles crossover is when I fell off. And it wasn't because of the crossover. It was just, like, something at the time was keeping me where I couldn't read it. And it was like, you know what, I don't want to... I wasn't just going to keep consuming it if I didn't have time. And I didn't have the time to catch up. So I'm going to get all of that and traded, you know, figure out what I don't have and get it all together and read it all. Because this just... Especially reading this ending is just like, yeah, this... And it's the whole reason I started reading it in the first place is because I love... that concept of the story. It's the reason I like comics. I like, you know, this idea of collaborative story, and that's exactly sort of what this is saying. It's like these stories are not the characters. Even Gillen is making the point and saying yeah. that it's not his story. That's why he can't, that's why yeah. it's like he has to like self-contain it, because this is the only time that he sort of controls the story. But it's not his story. It's anybody's story who reads it, which is, goes back to the Nordic culture in the sense that it's like these are created stories, these are stories that are retold, and there's little shifts and things. So, but
it's like these
overall,
stories, it's not like, even a question where these stories belong to Marvel or to the other writers who will come along to write them later. Mm-hmm. These stories are centuries old.
Yes.
These are stories that are defined by something that goes way beyond editorial remit.
Right.
Loki's story is and the you know, I mean that's what where it all springs from, is that Loki more than even I mean there are comic book characters who have managed to effect permanent change in their lives, mm-hmm. but Loki is damned. Loki will never accomplish this.
Right.
And this is a story of how he tries and ultimately cannot.
I would absolutely love to see. I love Tom Hiddleston as Loki. I would absolutely love to see a Loki kid in a Thor movie. Just saying.
Well, yeah, but I mean, but even like, look at the story of Leia and Hela, you know, where it's like that moment puts Loki back into place within the Marvel storyline, where it makes the Marvel story conform in a way to the mythology. Brilliant. You know what I mean? It's like, but that's the whole point. It's like, this character can't be other than what he is, and he will be that. You know, it may, just like you say, it may take time. It may, you know, it's going to be another writer. It's going to be someone down the road. Loki's going to go back to big, you know, phallic horns, as my wife calls them. I don't know why. But, but you know, he's going to go back to being that Loki at some point. And... Yeah. That's because it is what it is. Not just because of Marvel, but because of the mythology and everything else. So,
yeah.
Good stuff. I mean,
we will not see it like again. It is a closed circle and one writer's work and run in a way that even something like Brubaker's Cap or Hickman's Fantastic Four, or something else we're talking about in this show, it is more like Morrison's. Yeah, it's more like Morrison's Animal Man or something.
Yeah.
It's that sort of run where it's a creator not just finding a new take on an established thing, but really completely making it their own and making some kind of statement about life, the universe, and everything in what they are doing. It is probably... I mean, I'm going to get his Iron Man and I'm going to get his Young Avengers. Mm-hmm. I'm really looking forward to more of it, but... I think Journey into Mystery could really be the feather in Kieran Gillen's cap for a long, long time to come.
Well, and let's give some credit to Marvel, because, you know, we talked
about letting it happen.
What is, yeah, I mean, you know, on the other side of the aisle, you've got DC, who's the only way that they could think to do anything was to throw out their entire universe and try to reinvent it. Whereas Marvel, here's two good titles, you know, back to back that we talked about. Journey into Mystery, which, you know, is basically just Thor by another name, but with another story.
Which everybody scoffed at the very start. Oh, Thor has to have a new number one to tie in with his film, so we'll just change his old one. But, you know, we'll milk the readers, we'll keep the numbers going on the old one and make it something else. And then what a something else it turned out to be.
Yeah, really.
Yeah.
But you know, here they go with Hickman's run, and here they go with Journey, where Marvel has... You know, they've let some of these good books happen. I mean, even Christos Gage's Avengers Academy, even though it eventually did end up being canceled, it had a long run. And Marvel has let this go. It's like they have allowed some titles to just be good and let them do their thing and just be good and build an audience, I think, through that, you know, instead of...
Smaller one, but a dedicated one. Yeah. I mean, Journey into Mystery has an audience like no other book has.
Yeah.
And that may spill over, you know, like into Young Avengers.
Correct.
Yes.
Yep. And again, it may spill over into Iron Man as well. Yeah. You know, people now, you know, it's doing that for me. I, you know, have come to appreciate Gillen's work, and so I'm going to be reading Iron Man.
I haven't read Iron Man in 8 years, but yeah. I'm going to start again now.
Exactly. It's been like 15, it's been like 12 years for me, so, you know.
Oh, God. I think the last time I read Iron Man was back during the, when they relaunched it along with Avengers and Captain America after Heroes Return.
Hey, that was good Iron Man. That was Kurt Busiek's Iron Man.
I've added a lot of new books thanks to Marvel now, and Jesus Christ, I think you've convinced me to get Iron Man now.
Too. Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah. That was the first one that was going on my list.
Yeah, that was neat.
I mean, it was Hulk, it was Avengers, it was New Avengers, and I wavered a little on Cap because I was like, I'm not a huge fan of Rick Remender, but I am a huge fan of John Romita Jr.'s art, so that's what they got
now. Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if it's just because I'm more of a Marvel fan than a DC fan or whatever, but while Marvel now is perhaps not making as big of a splash concept-wise as the New 52 did, by volume, there are certainly a much larger number of books that look to me like a reason to get excited.
Yeah.
Weird on the Hulk, Gillen on Iron Man, Fraction on FF, Aaron on Thor, Arena, Young Avengers, all these things?
Yeah. Like, when New 52 came out, it was like,
I guess I'll try.
I guess I'll buy Voodoo.
So that's why I say I think, you know, we need to give props to Marvel in the sense that they've let some of these really great books just be great and just let them be, you know, and that's, I think that shows a lot of bravery and a lot of good choices on the part of editorial to just say, you know what, these are good books. They're not really hurting us. They're paying for themselves. They're not making us a ton of money, but they're paying for themselves. So, you know, we'll let them go. So thank you, Marvel.
Yeah.
For being cool.
Thank you, Marvel.
Thank you, Marvel, for being cool and not screwing up your books, you know.
You know what else I didn't mention there is that I really have to mention also is that this issue, the art on this issue, this is with art by Stephanie Hans, who has been the cover artist for at least, I think, I'm not sure if it's every issue, but the vast majority of issues mm-hmm. are Journey into Mystery, and she does a beautiful job on it.
Oh, it's
an gorgeous looking comic. It's a painterly style. And yeah, just had to throw that one in there. I mean, Journey into Mystery is not a book that's had a consistent art team. We had Doug Braithwaite at the start, who did not hang around all the way through Fear Itself, which disappointed me. We had Richard Elson, was a regular contributor. Carmine Giandomenico did the Exiled crossover. Alan Davis did the Fear...
Really liked Alan Davis, by the way.
Oh, yeah. He did the Thor issues of Everything Burns, but he didn't do the... Yeah, the Journey into Mystery issues of it. It's been a bit, with the exception of those rather dodgy Will Portisio
Where there's Fortuito. No, I didn't sneeze. That's his name.
Of those spiritual visions which were a bit dodgy, it's been an artistically very sound book. Mm-hmm. And also, hey, Richard Elson, my favorite Sonic the Hedgehog artist from when I was like 12 years old, doing one of my favorite friggin' comics again now, friggin' 20 years later. Holy crap. Way to go. Yes. Awesome. Yep. That's perhaps just the last little bit. I can throw at Journey into Mystery. Fantastic. Right. Sure, I could come up with something else if you wanted to give me some more time, but we better stop.
I know it's too bad that I know Nicole's going to be disappointed that she didn't get to make it for talking about Journey, but I'm sure we'll get a few of her thoughts maybe next week when she comes back. So,
oh, and just as a plug, after you've heard me talk like really good, nice, awesome things about a comic, like that's probably some of the biggest, nicest things I've ever said about a comic on this show. If you'd like to hear me utterly savage a comic in a way that I don't think I've ever savaged anything on this show before, except maybe Ultimates. What was that? New Ultimates? Like 3 years ago?
That was good.
Check out an upcoming issue. Check out, rather, an upcoming episode of Fanboy Versus. Not Fanboy Versus. That's this show. Edit this to this thing.
No.
Check out an upcoming episode of The Underbase, where we'll be talking about the Transformers Timelines issue from BotCon 2012.
That's awful!
Is quite possibly one of, if not the worst Transformers comics ever. And me, regular Underbase host King Grimmy, Matt, and Grufflock from the Old Oil House, Adam, tear that thing a new one in ways that you don't even see on this show.
It is awful.
I will really have to.
Yeah, that I read that at, I think I read that like right after I got back, and I was like, wow, this is really awful.
It's funny for that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So check that out. I did. It hasn't gone up yet at the time of recording. We just recorded it today. I've done two podcasts today. And don't know when it's going to go up exactly. It'll not be up by the time this goes up, so just look out for it if you want to see True Hate Unleashed.
Okay.
Oh, wow.
Well, that's it. That's the show. Ken, thanks so much for coming in, hanging out, talking with us. Hope you had fun.
I did. Just wish I had a little bit more to talk about on some of them.
You know.
Lightly.
That's like how I started out on the show. Yeah. I was like, I don't know, and like I had to be quiet for like a year and a half of hosting to like get to the point where it's like I felt like I could talk. But no, it was fun having you. Glad maybe we'll have you back again sometime. You should.
I'll be picking up a lot more stuff in the next couple of months.
It's a good time to get into comics. It really is.
Yeah.
Plus, like I was cool reading, stuff going. I was reading a bunch of DC stuff. And if it's happened, it's like, okay, I'll try and transition over, and then that didn't work out.
Well, if you want to get more of Ken and myself as well, you can listen to Superhero Time. That posts on Tuesdays. It's audio only, so you're okay. You don't have to look at us. But that is our the Toku podcast on the TF Radio Network. We talk mostly about Kamen Rider and Sentai when it's good, and we're going to be talking about Superhero Tyson, not this week but next, I believe. So
that just crossover movie of both of them.
Yeah, so that should be pretty great. I haven't got to watch it yet, so I'm pretty excited.
Yeah, I know you spoke words, but I have no idea what you just.
You don't want to know, dude. You do not want to know, okay? Because I started on this show. And again, like the first few episodes, you know, the first few months, like, I didn't know anything, just kept watching stuff. Now I'm on the show, I'm like, I'm talking the lingo, you know, I have like $300 worth of figures pre-ordered, you know, it's like,
Don't feel too bad because they're doing Marvel figure arts coming soon now.
I know, I saw those Iron Man figure arts, oh my gee. Oh my gee! If you guys have not seen it, you need to Google for some of the Marvel figure arts that are coming out. The War Machine figure art looks incredible. Wants that so bad. So anyway, it's a fun show. You should check it out. It's a lot of your mom jokes. It's basically like five of the geekiest guys you could ever find, basement dwellers, doing a show. So you should check that out. Like I said, it posts on Tuesdays. Our show is recorded live on Sundays, so we do the show live when it doesn't mess up.
And the stream doesn't crash.
And the stream doesn't crash. it's 4 p.m. Eastern, 9 p.m.
My video was frozen for half of it. Then it started up. Then it crashed.
Yeah,
so,
and now it's kind of pixelated, so it looks like you may be Japanese porn at this point. But 4 p.m.
And worse things.
4 p.m. Eastern, 9 p.m. GMT, and I don't have to say time as well, as Chris thankfully pointed out for me. It's not really that this week. I guess I should have mentioned that, too, because there's a little bit of a time change. Our
4 p.m. GMT.
Yeah, our time change is next week, I think.
Yeah, so it'll all be back to normal.
It'll all be back
to
normal.
You didn't even need
week.
To mention it.
So probably didn't need to mention it, but, you know, whatever. anyway, our show posts on Monday, so you can check that out. Go to the website, fanboyversus.com. Also, you can go to tfradio.net, check out the show live at tfradio.net/live, and follow
us
on Twitter.
Sorry to the live listeners this week.
Yep, sorry, folks, that, you know.
You just had to come check out the podcast version.
It's a free show. Sorry, I don't know what to tell you. you know. Just whatever it was that you paid for the show, just get a refund. And, you know, there you go.
Refund of $0.
Yes. We'll get a full
just
refund.
Just email Brian Kilby at tfradio.net.
Brian. You know,
your refund code is 112356.
Right.
I don't know.
So, anyway, thanks so much for tuning in. And please tune in next time when it'll be Fanboy versus.
This has been Fanboy Versus. Visit us at tfradio.net for show notes and to subscribe to the podcast. Follow us on Twitter at TF Radio for news and updates. Like the podcast? Leave us feedback on iTunes. Copyright 2011, Radio Free Cybertron.